This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara, and this is the Kenai Conversation. On today's episode of the Kenai Conversation, we're joined by the Central Kenai Peninsula's Alaska State Legislative Delegation, Representatives Justin Ruffridge and Bill Elam, and Senator Jesse Bjorkman. Thank you all for being here.
Yeah, happy to be here.
There you go.
Excellent. Yeah, glad we're here, Ashlyn, and happy to be here.
So I guess, you know, it's been a while since the session ended. I'd love to hear what you guys have been up to. There's been a little bit of legislative activity since you know, you guys gaveled out back in May. What have you all been up to?
Well, thanks for that. I think I can speak for all of us when I say that even though we are not in session in Juneau, our offices remain very busy advocating for the people here on the Kenai Peninsula and helping out with concerns about permanent fund dividend eligibility, as well as one might not think, but with the draw hunt deadline coming up, many people approach me in my office, helping them put in for draw hunts because a paper option is not available. So we're happy to assist if folks don't have access to internet and they want to apply for some draw hunt tags. It's kind of one of the off the wall things that comes up every now and again, but certainly responsive and talking about road conditions, continuing to advocate for folks on the Kenai Peninsula that folks are getting what they deserve from the state of Alaska to the best of our ability. And we're that voice and intersection between the people of our area and state government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been busy. You know, you go down to Juneau. This was my freshman year, as everybody already kind of knows. But you go down, work through, you know, all of the legislative session and then came back, you know, then you kind of have to get life back to being normal again, if you kind of can. But my wife and the boys and I, you know, tried to take a week or two there after session to be able to kind of get, you know, family back together and do everything. And then from there, you know, just kind of hit the ground running. There was a lot of meetings that I had with you know, constituents, as Jesse just kind of pointed out, ranging from PFD to post offices to you name it, everything that was kind of going on, to also meeting with industry areas specific to kind of my committees with resources, education, and fisheries. And so I had a lot of conversations with folks about the issues that we're having with fishing here on the South Central area. I've been to a ton of schools and with a lot of the parents and community members, had meetings with resources ranging from coal mines up in the interior to Glenfarne coming down in the AKLNG, and then just being engaged with, you know, all the variety of community events. You know, my district spreads pretty wide from Nikiski all the way down to Bear Creek, so there's a lot of communities and a lot of events that have been going on throughout that process. And then, you know, also with our local stakeholders, ranging from, you know, our cities and assemblies and school boards. So it's just, you know, a lot of things going on and just trying to stay engaged and involved with everything that we have.
Yeah, I have very little to add to what Bill and Jesse are saying. I think it's really important to know that the job of representing our constituents doesn't stop, even though the legislative session stops. I think Senator Bjorkman said it well, that we're in many cases the go-between our government and our folks that live here on the Kenai. One thing I will add just from my specific standpoint was from the legislative end, I was appointed to the Education Task Force that has been meeting during the interim and been trying to keep that conversation going, specifically around policy areas that we can work on during the interim and even during this next session, to try to have some direction on how we have this education conversation, because that's not going to stop anytime soon. You know, I think we just saw from our school board here locally that they're facing another deficit for this upcoming year. And, you know, we have to start having some of these conversations both locally and at the state level. How do we want our state education system to function and look like? funding and policy wise. So we've, I think, had three meetings with the Education Task Force in the interim, and trying to keep folks engaged in that conversation. So, and that will be ongoing the next 12 months.
When you look back at last session, I guess, is there any glaring unfinished business that you know you're going to have to jump right back into come January?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing Ashland has to do with highway projects on the Kenai Peninsula and Central Kenai Peninsula specifically, but mostly our DOT highway program across the state as a whole. Because of vetoes of reappropriations of projects that would have delivered money to pay for the state match of federal highway projects, that puts about a $70 million hole in capital budget for fiscal year 26, as well as how we're going to find money to provide match for the highway program going into fiscal year 27. So that will need to be dealt with right away. I know that members of the Senate Finance Committee are very interested in chatting about those reappropriation vetoes and why they were done, and figure out rationale as to, was this a good use of state resources to, say, spend 100% state dollars on a road extension to Cascade Point down near Juneau for a ferry system, when that expenditure is not supported by an economic benefit through economic study, and is also not supported by the Alaska Marine Highway Advisory Board. So there will be a lot of conversations about how to handle the fiscal picture that is responsible for delivering on area road projects. That's state match dollars that are used for the Sterling Highway Safety Corridor, the Cooper Landing Bypass, and many other projects around the Kenai that we would like to see delivered. And so using those state dollars in that way is especially concerning when we have outstanding needs, especially right here in our backyard. And the Nikiski folks are very aware that the bluff is receding quickly toward the highway, and that could be a very large problem if the road falls in. So I've been advocating heartedly and hard to get that problem fixed sooner rather than later. We talked about that at our meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee, which I chair, on Friday, and had some discussion. Right now, their plan is that project is on a 3 to 5 year timeline. That's not acceptable. Mm. We need the state to act in a judicious manner to get things done in a way that's going to save money. And there's lots of questions with the DOT under this administration. Specifically, are the actions done in a way that is judicious or not? And so folks have a lot of questions about that. So filling that hole with our match program to really upgrade and maintain our highways will be one thing that we'll deal with right away.
I feel like funding for transportation projects is something that the three of you have been not necessarily loud, but certainly vocal about. Just interpreting what you were just saying, Jesse, do you feel like the peninsula is being singled out right now when it comes to funding for projects, highway or otherwise?
No, not in a bad way. We've been able to actually capture significant amounts of money for our highway projects, specifically by keeping the Cooper Landing Bypass or actually getting it restored in the STIP. I was very direct and made it very clear that we need that Cooper Landing Bypass done as soon as possible so that we could get that area settled. It's a vital transportation corridor. And also so that we could complete the project and save money. Dragging it out for years and years just makes that project cost more money. We started it. We made a commitment to Federal Highways that we were going to build this thing. Whether you agree with it or not, we're in it now. And so to not complete it means that we would have to pay back a ton more money. We get it done sooner rather than later. That means we can save money on the project. So I was successful in getting that put back in the STIP. We advocated as a group for that heavily last year. Work done by you and other area media to highlight that, hey, this Cooper Landing Bypass project got pulled out of the STIP for some inexplicable reason, which is the STIP is Statewide Transportation Improvement Plan.
Thank you.
And so we got that back in. So that's great. And we're going to continue to advocate for more highway dollars. But we need those to make sure that the lane miles we have are maintained adequately. So that is the pavement surface of the current alignment of the Sterling Highway through Cooper Landing. Again, it's the bluff there in Nikiski by South Miller Loop. It is a pavement quality even that we have on some state roads through town where you have significant rutting of intersections in Kenai and other areas where we need improvement in order to make our roads safe. And so when things get slippery and the pavement is uneven because of ruts and other things, it just makes it harder to stay on the road.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I would just kind of add to what Jesse was just saying is, you know, one of the things I hear about regularly is road-related infrastructure issues, you know, through Cooper Landing, out into Moose Pass. And those pathways that we have throughout the highway corridors here really kind of ripple out into all of the rest of the peninsula, because you basically can't go anywhere if you can't, you know, drive past Moose Pass or drive through Cooper Landing. And so those have been big issues. But then as you come out further into the Central Peninsula, all the way down to Homer and all the way up to Nikiski, we have had significant challenges just trying to get stuff done. But a good portion of that also kind of comes back to the sort of the fiscal situation that we're in here in Alaska, which is kind of a challenging issue. And I suppose that'll be a very big topic that gets talked about a lot throughout session. And, you know, how do we prioritize some of these infrastructure related issues to make sure that, you know, we can still drive on our roads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, fiscal picture right now, dire, I think, is an accurate description. You know, where are we with state finances heading into the next session? And I mean, how it feels like it's maybe obvious to say that's going to bleed into every conversation. But, you know, is it better or worse than last year? I guess, how is that going to be driving what happens in Juneau?
It's definitely going to be a big talking point. And, you know, the price per barrel on oil has been a challenge for sure. You know, when we start looking at where we're going to be, I would expect, you know, not to really see a whole ton of dollars coming our direction from the capital budget, even though it's my plan to, or intention, I should say, to go in there and advocate for the projects that we've got, you know, down here on the peninsula. But yeah, it's definitely going to be an issue.
Yeah, going forward for next year, Ashlyn, our revenue picture, it's challenged in some ways because of the price of oil being at $65 currently. However, the stock market has performed very well, and so that part of the revenue forecast for the state of Alaska is good. So the revenue forecast going into creating this budget will be similar to the revenue forecast last year, but our expenditures are up in a few ways. And so as things happen, like this DOT match that we talked about, that's a significant financial burden on going forward for next year, because that was, we essentially are going to have to use general fund dollars, new general fund dollars, rather than reappropriating money from other projects. And so what it looks like, I just called our legislative finance director before I came over here today, and it looks like we may have some additional money in a revenue forecast for this next year. However, that amount of money gets significantly eroded because of things that we haven't paid for yet. So the governor vetoed and then is going to ask for in a supplemental over $75 million in fire suppression.
Hmm.
And we don't know how much money the state will spend for the Typhoon Halong response. We are unsure exactly about how much the state will be on the hook for if we have indeed failed the education funding disparity test for the federal government. That we're not exactly sure as far as what new state employee contracts are going to mean for increased cost. So all of these things add up over time to essentially put us at almost a zero sum for if the state did exactly what it did for fiscal year 26. If we take that and move it to 27, we're about the same dollars, we're close, but it's not going to take much at all to essentially push that into a deficit situation.
Mm-hmm.
So what had happened getting out and closing the session last spring, the legislature's budget, and then after vetoes, we had with the oil price forecast at $68 a barrel, about $130 million surplus. That's essentially evaporated because the price of oil has gone down and it's been hovering below $68. So with the questions around what additional costs will happen from DOT match, having to pay for fire suppression and not just put that off, what we're looking at for reduction in federal dollars throughout scope of many things, there are a lot of question marks. It's not horribly awful right now, but it's not quite good either. It could be way better. And so there's good and bad there. There's lots of desire by some to shift more cost to local governments.
Mm-hmm.
However, that means higher taxes here for local municipalities. That means there's upward pressure on property tax as well as upward pressure on sales tax for local governments if the state is not going to pay for those things. So there's no free lunch in any of this. It costs money for the state to execute its constitutionally mandated mission of providing for public safety, criminal justice, courts, prisons, as well as provide for education, to provide for roads and road maintenance. So covering those things, as well as the state part of Medicaid, that's big dollars and big bills for the state, and it doesn't come easy, unfortunately. So that's kind of a rough picture of where we're at. Mm-hmm. I thought it might be worse, actually, before I called Alexi Painter today, but he let me know that. But I'm sure we'll find out more as the governor's budget is released here in, about a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then going forward, as our finance committees get to work at the beginning of session, we'll learn more. So,
keeping in mind that the governor's budget is about to come out, are you expecting any Kenai, like usually when that document's published, I'll go through and just control F or Kenai Peninsula cities, different things like that. Are you expecting any carve outs for our area in his proposal?
I'm not sure what I'm expecting. I'm hoping that there'll be some carve outs, I'm not quite sure what the budget's going to look like just yet. I've not had a lot of inside information coming my way yet, so I am anxiously awaiting to see what the budget will look like. I know last year, whenever the budget came out, there was some significant gaps. It was about a $1.6 billion deficit. So even with carve-outs, it becomes more challenging trying to balance that out with those kind of significant gaps. And so I'm hoping there'll be some recommendations as far as revenues coming our direction from the governor's office.
Mm-hmm.
As we look at what's happened in the past with governor's budgets, I'm thankful that the governor's office recognizes that the Kenai Peninsula could seriously benefit from improvements in our communications infrastructure, as well as area road projects, some of which we talked about. So through DOT's budget, I am hopeful to see your projects continuing to move forward on a rational timeline that really prioritizes critical needs first, and then seeing infrastructure projects like communication towers along the Seward and Sterling Highway. Those are good, but those projects have to be held in the budget by the legislature. And when we have some fiscally constrained times, it's difficult to do that simply because there's not money to go around for everybody to do everything that folks want. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I would add on to is, you know, when we start talking about the infrastructure, there's been a lot of conversation and attention on the AKLNG project, and the governor's office.
We will get there.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And the governor's office has been, very, very active in those conversations. And so several things that have been brought to my attention that I've made sure has gotten on everybody else's radar is that, you know, we do have a lot of aged and limited infrastructure out here on the Kenai Peninsula. And so to be able to properly support large projects like that, we really need to build up some infrastructure out here in advance, because, you know, could you imagine trying to traverse Cooper Landing with a ton of steel and metal and all the supplies needed to be able to do and support any kind of a massive project like that, and then not have our roads up to snuff to be able
to do that.
It'd
be a rough
that.
Ride.
Yeah, it'd be a real rough trip. And mm-hmm. So those are things that I've been making sure are on everybody's radar when we're talking about budgeting and where we're going to go into this next year.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when we talk about like these different financial constraints, you know, keeping in mind that you guys are 3 of 60 people down in Juneau, everybody is going down there with a list of projects or initiatives that they'd like to see funded. How do you, I guess, convince your colleagues, the governor, other people involved that the peninsula is worth investing in over maybe at the expense of other parts of the state?
For me, Ashlyn, that's a really easy answer. Here on the Kenai Peninsula, I really believe, and in a good way, that we are Alaska's playground. We are where lots of folks around the state like to come spend time and resources in order to recreate. So that means that we have a lot of Alaskans who have a vested interest in our roads being in good condition. And it's not, no one wants to sit in traffic for hours and hours because we have roads that cause accidents. No one wants to be endangered because our roads are unsafe. So those types of things are really good reasons why folks in Anchorage, in the Mattsu Valley, and other parts of the state should support our road projects down here. And it's a great place to live, work, and play here on the Kenai Peninsula, but also it's a great place for our state to prioritize because we're such an economic importance to our quality of life. And that's what I tell folks as they kind of think about, well, why should we invest in Kenai? We need to invest in our area because also we have a really important generation center for electricity on the Southern Peninsula with Bradley Lake. Mm-hmm. And so that is going to mean if we are going to maximize potential of that hydro project, we need to upgrade transmission lines off the Kenai Peninsula so that everyone's electric cost can go down because we can utilize more low-cost, sustainable, renewable hydropower. We could increase the output of the dam at Bradley Lake if we had better transmission. And so it's projects like that that are easy sell because they benefit everyone. And as we are investing in the Kenai Peninsula and growing our community, we're able to offer more resources and opportunities to other folks as well. And so it really is a mutual benefit to many, many people.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, you know, I mean, strategically where we're at here on the Kenai Peninsula, both, you know, coming in out of Seward, Homer, or, you know, into the Nikiski area and Kenai, we're strategically in a good spot for everybody. And so it kind of is the gateway to the rest of the state. Obviously, you know, Anchorage is a big hub, but you kind of, as all of that is going in, so from our refineries to the fishing and recreation, the tourism, you know, the amount of traffic that's coming up out of Seward into Anchorage just out of tourism is significant. Most, you know, a ton of people come from Anchorage down to Homer. So we are their backyard. And in many cases, we're also kind of the gate for people getting to them.
Mm-hmm. And Justin, I guess I do have a question specifically for you. You and I have talked before about how the peninsula is or is not represented on different on the state's finance committees, and I'm wondering if you expect that lack of representation going into things is going to impact how those conversations play out starting next session.
Well, I think, you know, it is an unfortunate thing, and it's been a long time, frankly, that since we've had representation. That being said, I think, you know, the peninsula representatives and senators have done a good job at still being able to promote, you know, some of these capital projects like the Cooper Landing Bypass and the Sterling Highway Safety Corridor and some of these other big projects getting done. I think we've worked really well with DOT. We've worked really well with the borough at getting these projects to the finish line. And I think we should focus on having a seat at the table. It's been a request. I know that Representative often, myself, has put forward often. I know Senator Bjorkman has as well, to just have that question of can we have a seat, and how to go about that. But Not all of the decisions are made at the finance table. There are decisions made by each person as a representative or senator through a variety of mechanisms. I think the finance committees do a good job of taking into account what each district's needs are and how to prioritize getting those needs met. And I think Senator Bjorkman said it well. We're in constrained times, and so you know it is even if you had that seat specifically in this time, it's still going to be difficult to, you know, stretch the dollars as far as maybe we would want to, because we are constrained on our revenue. So, I think it would be something that we highlight, especially as residents of the Kenai, as a thing that we take into this year, and make our voices heard as, you know, this is important to us. And you know, there's been in the House at least, for the last couple of weeks, you know, it's been a little bit of news, but we're in the process of losing two members, adding two new members. There's a new leader in the House, and Delena, I was elected as the minority whip. And so that's Representative Johnson out of Palmer. There's a potential for there to be an opening on the Finance Committee from Representative Johnson stepping away from that. And so we'll see the process to get that filled. You know, certainly I will be advocating for the Kenai Peninsula to fill that seat. So we'll see how that moves forward.
Are you going to try and take that chair or seat?
Well, I think it would be difficult to serve in a leadership position as well as try to give the Finance Committee the effort that it needs. And so lucky for us, we have more than one representative from the Kenai.
Well, in pivoting slightly, we've talked a little bit about the Alaska LNG project, but there's been so much happening with that this year. The Alaska Gasline Caucus folks heard from project leaders, it might have been a week ago, a couple weeks ago now, that they are maybe going to request some legislative changes as far as, you know, things like property taxes. And I'm wondering where you guys fall on supporting legislative action to help move that project forward.
I would love to see the project be able to move forward. You know, I mean, it's a great opportunity for Alaska. Everybody's been working on it for a long time. There are a lot of moving parts, ranging from the thing literally traverses the whole state. So I'd have to see what the policies look like. At this point, I haven't really seen specific policies. There's definitely been a lot of conversations. And so, you know, once we can see economically where the project is, I would imagine there's going to be a lot of conversation around, you know, how that works. What is it going to cost? What does the, you know, revenue structure look like? What does the permitting structure look like? It's all permitted, but there are property tax questions. There are resource related questions. So it'll be interesting to see what it looks like. So, not trying to give a non-answer, but I just don't have definitive information in front of me. And that's generally how I like to make the decisions. And so once I have some definitive information in front of me, that would be great. Right now, you know, the project and, you know, the support we have coming in from out of DC and really internationally, is great and is very exciting. But then, you know, well, what's the deal actually look like once we see it on paper? You know, so I'm very interested in seeing what the final numbers and everything look like.
Yeah, I can be maybe a little more definitive on at least my perspective, and I think the perspective that I share with many of my constituents, and that is the project absolutely needs to move forward, and it needs to move forward with one specific goal, and that is how do we ensure that we have cheaper energy for Alaskan residents. And I think Bill said, you know, it right when you say some of these things we have to look at and what are the metrics, what are the cost parameters, but at the end of the day, we have to be able to look at each other and say, hey, we did the best possible action here because look at, we've got sustainable, cheaper energy for everybody. Now, in my opinion, I think the legislature in many ways is in more of a get out of the way mode here. That's probably more of my personal opinion, but I also think that that's an opinion many of my constituents share. And, you know, when we get involved, especially on trying to, you know, figure out a tax structure or some of these things during the phase of trying to decide whether or not a final investment decision is going to be moving forward, you know, we might be doing more harm than good. And so I think that the number one priority, the question that we should be asking at the end of the day, when this project is completed, does it equal lower cost energy for Alaskan people? And if the answer to that is yes, and I can see point A to point B, then, you know, then we should just be all hands on deck rowing in that direction. And I think some of the factors in that are going to be what is the royalty? What is the cost for taxing on property? And so, you know, maybe the answer to that is, you know, something that we need to discuss, but it's discussing it, I think, at a later date than right this second.
You know, I would have to kind of go off of kind of what Justin was getting at there is that, yeah, the legislature absolutely needs to get on board with the plan of where we're going to go and how we're going to get there. Because we do the energy issues and everything that we have here on the peninsula, but also across the state are significant. And the legislature really does need to kind of make sure that we're not in the way and obstructing any of this, because that's going to be the biggest challenge, I think. The legislature in general likes to move slow on things. And this isn't something that's going to be coming in moving slow. This is going to be coming in and we're going to have a lot of work and we're going to need to move fast on it. And so I would say, you know, making sure that the legislature kind of stays out of the way is going to be a very important issue. And I kind of mentioned that earlier on this summer, but, you know, yeah, that's a very good point.
The biggest question now, even as more photo ops are taken and more tentative agreements are signed that are non-binding, the question is, how much is the federal government going to subsidize this project? Until off-takers, commercial buyers of exported LNG know what the final price is for gas molecules, and then that price gets determined by how much the federal government is willing to subsidize this project for providing gas to JBEAR, possible DOD data centers, possible XYZ things that are out there. Until we know what that final cost is going to be, we don't have a clear line of sight to a project. And so I think what folks need to consider is whether or not they care or how much they care about gas molecules that come to burner tips in their homes or businesses if they come from the North Slope of Alaska or they come from somewhere else, because those costs might be two different things. And so there's no magical fairy of a formula to deliver gas molecules in a place where no infrastructure exists to do that. There are possibilities of electrical generation on the North Slope and transmission via high amp or high voltage DC lines. That's a possibility that's been looked at. There's possibilities of this LNG pipeline. There's a million possibilities, but the longer we have to wait for knowing what the federal government's involvement is in supplying financial backing to this project, the more cloudy things become. And you mentioned Glenn Farn and others providing some information to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. Unfortunately, the more that legislators hear from those folks with kind of these cloudy, rosy, canned presentations, they're developing a credibility gap with the legislature. Why do you say that? So why I say that is, they're hearing the same canned presentations over and over, but no real answers on what the project needs in order to move forward. I think absolutely, if the gas project functions essentially as a public utility that's regulated by the RCA, they're delivering utility gas for electric utilities and NSTAR to pay our heat and light bills, then yeah, they should have probably a property tax holiday. They should not pay property taxes. We shouldn't be increasing costs on ourselves to deliver those things. However, Glen Farms is a for-profit company, and they're going to make money on this deal, a deal by which, by any design, is not really going to net the state a ton of revenue. Its design is to provide for low-cost energy. If it doesn't deliver on that, then we need to ask ourselves other questions. If the project is going to result in higher cost energy than we would even pay by importing gas, then we have to ask ourselves why we want to do this project. Mm-hmm. So for me, I don't ask a question of my light switch or my boiler, you know, where did these electrons come from? Where did these gas molecules come from? I want them to work. And I don't want my utility bills to be super high. But at the same time, I want to invest in our state and I want to build out resources here so that we can grow our economy and develop our natural resources. Mm-hmm. But if there aren't market-based solutions to deliver those products, I have a hard time saying, well, it's okay, we're going to take state money and gamble on a project when we don't know that we have customers for the molecules that we're trying to produce. And so those are just many of the questions outstanding. We're waiting on a financial decision. So a final investment decision there, or FID, that's supposed to come out in January. Glen Farm folks and AKLNG folks are saying that they will have that to present to the legislature. We have heard about this idea about property tax abatement or some kind of holiday, but really we have not heard as legislators any ideas around other legislation that's needed for the gas line to move forward. That's a good thing. That's mm-hmm. a good thing. That means that the project can move forward if it's economic and if it makes market sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we certainly could do an entire Kenai conversation about the AKLNG project, and in fact I have, but because we have limited time, I would also like to talk about education. There was a lot of there was an increase when all of the dust was settled. There was an increase to the base amount of money the state gives per student. And Jesse, as you mentioned, the district, our local school district, has already said it's looking at a $7.5 million deficit heading into next year. Should folks expect any additional education funding during this upcoming session, or do you anticipate it's going to take up as much space given where things landed after last session?
No, I don't think that there will be any additional dollars for K-12 education on the table. I think that districts are going to talk about their need and talk about the consequences of that. But given our financial reality now and going into the future, I think talking about an additional increase to the BSA pragmatically is unlikely, but that doesn't change the fiscal realities of what districts are going through. And so what that means is there's an expectation that districts continue to close schools, they continue to reduce the amount of educational opportunities that are available for students, but those expectations by some leaders, they have consequences. And so as we look at this thing, our state budget continues to be driven by the price of a barrel of oil, and that in turn means that essentially the price of a barrel of oil has an impact on how well kids in second grade learn how to read. Because of things like class size, because of things like additional reading supports and small group opportunities that are available to students in their early years. The solution to improving educational outcomes isn't only about money, but that has a large effect. Mm-hmm. That would be like saying, you know, the dependence of fish having a life isn't all about water. But what does a fish do without water? It doesn't go very far. And that's really the same thing that I think when we're talking about education is you have to be able to put in the investment to get the return that you want. Folks will see a couple of bills about education coming from my office this year, talking about students having a confirmation that they have achieved some level of proficiency according to the standards at an older level so that they can achieve a certificate or a seal of proficiency on their diploma. I think that that is something that students should strive for and achieve. I think that's something that parents would appreciate, and certainly the public. I think the public deserves to know when students graduate from high school, they should be able to earn a credential that says, hey, I'm proficient according to the state standards. Also, we're looking at ways that we can encourage students to have better attendance in school. Since COVID happened, and even before that a little bit, we were seeing attendance numbers at our schools decline precipitously. And it's very difficult for students to get the education that they need if they're not executing that education program that they should be. And so I'm thankful that many students have the opportunity to homeschool with great parents who provide excellent education opportunities for their kids. And I want students to make sure that they are learning what they need to by being a participant actively in their education and not missing out on too many opportunities. So looking at those things, short and sweet answer is I wouldn't expect a real clear expectation of more money. That's just not pragmatic going into this year. But we're looking at education policy to make education outcomes better.
You know, it's a great question. There's definitely plenty of conversations going on around it. And I would agree that I don't think that we're going to be looking at any additional revenues for education going into this session. I think that, you know, one of the big questions, at least in my mind, is what does it actually cost to educate in Alaska? And it seems like we have several building blocks there, but a couple of pieces missing. And that was a conversation piece that I was trying to have at a variety of times within the legislative session last year. And so you hear about shortfalls or this or that, you know, a lot of the problems. But when we start looking at what the solution is, if we don't have the information that tells us, you know, what does it actually cost here versus, you know, like we can have conversations all day long about what does it cost in Montana or California or Arkansas to do education, but we really don't have the specific information for what we need to do here in Alaska to make that happen. And so that's kind of something that I've been pushing for and really want to see where and how that looks. The other big challenge that we have is you look across all of the facilities and infrastructure that we have, and not just in our district, but in every other district that's out there. We have buildings in a variety of different forms of disarray, and not traditionally where you would actually be able to have quality education. And so that's another talking area that I've been kind of working on, and I've got some policy that I've been working on. I'm not sure that it's going to be fully ready for this turn or this session, but it is something that I'm looking at because you know, in many cases we build rather large, and then we wind up finding ourselves in a situation where we still need to provide education in a place where there may only be, you know, 8 or 10 or 15, you know, students, but then we have large facilities where it's, you know, tens of thousands of square foot of facility that we're still trying to maintain and own and operate, and that's not a good use of those resources and abilities. And so it's something that I'm really kind of focused on, is trying to make sure that we're building within the local means to be able to properly support. A couple other areas, you know, attendance is definitely a big issue, and so I've had multiple conversations with a variety of administrators here, particularly on the peninsula, to find out what's working and what's not working. You know, we have some of our schools where they're significantly under the average of dollars spent per pupil. And then we have other schools where we're spending significantly over average in those areas. And so kind of trying to find out what's working, what's not working. Those have been things that I've been working on, you know, here in the interim. And I plan to take that with me to the conversations I'm having in Juneau this year.
Yeah, well, obviously education's been, you know, a big part of my legislative thus far, and currently serving on the education task force, as I mentioned in the introduction. And I think there's going to be a lot of things that we have as discussions. I do not think that there will be an increase in revenue this year for all the reasons that you've already heard. But I do think one of the key aspects of this task force, in my opinion, and I've said it in each of our task force meetings thus far, I think we need to take a hard look at our foundation formula and how it incentivizes or disincentivizes certain types of schools and a small school versus a large school, a district cost factor. There's a whole bunch of elements to our foundation formula that I think causes some issues. And I also think that within districts, you have a significant issue as well, where in our district, for example, which is different than others, that might be a single district with one school in it. Our district has a school, for example, in Soldotna, and then it has a school in Tyonek. And those schools, they cost a different amount of money to serve. And so we almost need a cost factor within a cost factor to really be able to have that dollar mean the same, depending on where it goes. And so I think the Kenai, as a microcosm of all of Alaska, really should be at the forefront of this education discussion. And that's why I was happy to serve on that education task force, because we do have rural schools, we have road system schools, we have large schools, small schools. And I think that the foundation formula should be an area that we are looking at and really analyzing, which I think is the job of the legislature, to audit the functionality of our foundation formula. And I really plan to be an advocate for that in the upcoming session, and then during the interim of 2026 as well.
Well, and we've talked a few times about things happening at the federal level and how those may impact what's happening here in Alaska. And on the topic of education, there is certainly a lot happening in DC right now. And I'm wondering, how in tuned are you all? And I will say Representative Elam just stepped out because he has another commitment, so we will not be hearing from him again. But how closely do you monitor what is happening at the federal level in terms of what the trickle-down effects might be for folks here in Alaska?
Well, I try to keep pretty close tabs on that, and feel like I have a good relationship with our federal delegation. I can't speak for Senator Bjorkman, but I spent a little bit of time in Washington, D.C. during this interim and got to meet with some of our delegation, and also met with them here in Alaska as well. And they do a really good job, all three of them, at keeping our offices in the know about what's happening. On the education front, that has been something that has not really been conversation from their perspective. Our biggest issue right now from the federal government perspective is the disparity test, as Senator Bjorkman said. It consistently throws our foundation formula and our funding of schools into a question mark status. And it really, if it goes to the end of the sort of penalty that we for the failing the disparity test, the state of Alaska has to be responsible for an additional tens of millions of dollars to education funding that we are otherwise not responsible for. And so I think we have an obligation as the holders of the purse to ask these questions about, no, we're the last remaining state that the disparity test means what it means to us, to any other state. And so we have an obligation, I think, to ask that question: is this the right way to be doing this? And the disparity test is a very long conversation. So if your listeners have questions about what the disparity test means, I am really happy to sit down with folks and go over that. It's probably really boring listening for the air, so I'll keep it brief there. But it's a bit complicated and convoluted, but it's a conversation we should be having.
Is there a short and snappy Reader's Digest version that you can give us and just a quick explanation of what that is, or is that not something we can do quickly?
I think I would be doing it a disservice to just try to brush over it, but maybe Senator Bjorkman has a Reader's Digest version. Mine is going to get complicated if I say it.
Okay. We'll throw it to Jesse, see if he's got some insights.
I guess most basically, the disparity test is a measurement of investment in student education, depending on the cost of what it takes to deliver education in that area. So, are we investing an appropriate amount of dollars to educate all students in the state, no matter what their zip code is? So is that investment capable of delivering the outcome that students deserve in rural Alaska, in Southeast Alaska, on the North Slope, in Fairbanks, in Nikiski? Basically, it's a measurement for, is a funding level appropriate and fair? It's not a total amount. It's about, is it equitable between all areas of the state?
And it sounds like the federal government is saying no.
According to that test, yes.
Okay.
Would you agree with that, Ruffridge?
Yes, I think the biggest issue from the disparity test, that was a great, now you've baited me into the long conversation, and that's good. You're doing a good job, Ashlyn. Mm-hmm. That test is exactly what Senator Bjorkman was defining it as. The biggest issue with it is if you fail it, there is a component of our federal dollars that go to rural education attendance areas, and the state of Alaska is allowed to, if they pass the disparity test, subtract that dollar amount from their total required spending under the foundation formula. And so if you fail the disparity test, which is to say you are providing in some way, shape, or form more funding to one area than the other, they say you can no longer deduct those dollars from your state aid, required state aid, and therefore those monies from the federal government will still come in. It's just that you can't deduct them. And so the state now will have to spend additional dollars in the on the funding of education that they would otherwise not have to if they passed the disparity test. And so that I think is the end result of the test, and the purpose behind the test is to determine whether or not you can deduct the federal monies for impact aid, which is to rural education attendance areas for the most part, from your state aid required amount. That's sort of the complex part.
And the problem is if we fail the disparity test, the communities that get federal impact aid may not need the money. For instance, the North Slope Borough would get a huge increase in their funding. They're not exactly short on funding. So failing the disparity test does not solve actually any problems of equity on a larger scale. And that's something that we need to look at. I am all for having the federal government get out of the way of the process and let us here in Alaska handle our own business. And I don't know why they don't. It's frustrating.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that was a fun detour that we just took down the disparity test road. I guess, you know, zooming back out, making another pivot since we are winding down on time here. You know, when you look at the legislature's ability to be productive during this upcoming session, is there anything that you see impacting that? And what's coming to mind is both closing out the actual legislature, the two-year cycle, but then also it being an election year. Those are two things that it seems like it's hard. I have a difficult time believing that they don't impact the way things get done in Juneau. And I'm wondering if the two of you agree or disagree with that.
Well, I think certainly an election year affects a lot of different things. I will say the House obviously is in an election every 2 years, so it affects all 40 of us. In the Senate, though, it's only half of them. And so I think there's a little more stability in an election season, and I'm certain Senator Bjorkman can correct me if I'm wrong, from a Senate perspective than it is from the House, because every House member is sort of jockeying for some sort of win potentially, or, you know, a thing that they can take home, I think is that. But I mean, that sort of gives me a segue to talk about some of the wins. Senator Bjorkman and I, and Representative Elam, since he's gone now, we can talk about him. But I think we had some wins in this session already, and I think that, you know, that speaks to our ability to work together. You know, we don't always agree on everything, and that's, you know, I think true of every single person that I've ever met, and that's okay. But we've actually found really great things to work together on. And I'll just highlight one, which was the prior authorization bill that Senator Bjorkman and I both worked on, and I sponsored in the House and he sponsored in the Senate. And, you know, that saw the finish line and has been put into law and will be implemented over the course of the next year. And that is a real big change that's going to have really amazing effects for residents of Alaska when they seek medical care, requiring insurers to answer you on a prior authorization, a path for appeals, a requirement that once you have an authorization for a chronic condition, you do not have to do that again. This was a big win, a really big win, and it really speaks to how you know, putting that foot forward of saying, what is a thing that consistently comes up as a problem that everyone can agree on needs to be fixed? And, you know, a lot of people in our community, a lot of people across the state of Alaska, our Division of Insurance Director, Lori Wainheyer, I mean, everybody just did a amazing job of working together on that. So working together is actually possible. That's what I want to put out there. And that's really the way that you can get a win, is when you're willing to do that. And, you know, for me, you know, I think that we've gotten wins already in this session. And so happy to go back, see what else we can put forward. And I think there's maybe some negativity about this next year due to budget constraints and such. But I think there's still a lot of good work we can do.
Yeah, no, I agree. We have accomplished quite a bit. The prior authorization bill was a huge accomplishment, and I am proud to have carried that with Rep. Ruffridge. Also, we had some significant insurance code reforms that we passed, making it easier for businesses to construct things in a meaningful way, in both very large projects for resource development as well as housing units, so that they could essentially get an insurance project that works for them. Also, holding especially property insurers. Or insurers accountable for living up to their word when companies sign on with them, that they're not going to get ripped off for labor costs to rebuild if they have a loss, so that they actually are going to be accountable for something that, you know, that folks might not think about, but aircraft insurance. Our cost of airplane insurance in this state is outrageous. It's the highest in the country for a good reason. Before last year, our state was not regulating rates and forms for aircraft insurance. And so that meant that folks who insured aircraft nobody was kind of looking over the shoulder of those insurance companies, looking out for consumers, making sure that those consumers were protected. And so certainly government doesn't need to be involved in every transaction, but there should be an avenue for redress for folks to go through if they have a bad actor take advantage of them. And in many of those spaces, they did not. So happy to stick up for folks when they have needs and they experience a loss, and are having insurance companies maybe not be responsive or not cover losses like they should. And so that's one of the many things that I'm able to do as chair of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. There isn't a lot of a positive outlook for what we could accomplish. If you're pragmatic, judging past performance of this legislature and this governor. However, I'm not without hope. I'm kind of the internal optimist here, Ashlyn, that I hope that we are able to get things done. We have large problems. We are capable of solving them. We just have to be willing to work together. I certainly am. I know Rep. Ruffridge and Rep. Elam, they want to get things done too, whether it is improving our electric grid by investing in transmission to reduce costs, reduce what we need to spend on spinning reserves and utilize more hydropower. We can do those things, but we have to work together. We have to work together on figuring out a correct path forward for the natural gas pipeline, if there is a role for the legislature to play in that. We have to continue to work on education and improving outcomes that aren't just about increasing dollars. We have to expect more culturally from education so mm-hmm. that our students can achieve that higher level. And part of that is just talking more positively about education in general. Is if we talk negatively or we talk down about our public schools or what kids learn in school because we don't like something we saw on national news, I think you completely ignore conversations that happen at a local level, and you do a disservice to teachers that are working hard and parents working hard every day to make sure that students get the best education possible. So we have lots of opportunities. I am encouraged. I've had the good fortune of being able to substitute teach in a number of schools this fall. And that encourages me to see those students with so much potential being willing to work hard and advocate for themselves. It was pretty entertaining. Ashlyn, I walked into a middle school classroom at Kenai Middle School not long ago, and a student wanted to know who he needed to talk to get his streetlight fixed on his street, you know? And then once he figured out that he could do that, he started to wonder about other things, like who he could talk to about a remodel at his school that the voters approved and no one has taken action on yet. He wanted to know who he could talk to about a number, like why he couldn't ride a snow machine where he wanted to anymore. Those things are vitally important to me, and it's great that students take an interest in those ideas and areas. And so I'm more positive than negative that we can accomplish things, but I'm just kind of measured in my expectation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and on the topic of engagement, as we are winding down this hour, there's a town hall coming up on Saturday, which I would love to give you guys the opportunity to plug. And any final thoughts? I know there's a lot of topics that we didn't talk about. We could certainly have many hours of Kenai convos about legislative issues, but I'll throw it to you for final thoughts and to plug that upcoming town hall.
Well, thanks, Ashlyn. We do have a town hall coming up Saturday, the 13th at 1 o'clock p.m. in the afternoon. We'll probably go for about 2 hours. So Saturday the 13th, you can pop over to the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly Chambers in between Christmas shopping and holiday errands. Of course, the Christmas in the Park event got moved to this Saturday, the 13th, from the 6th because of the windstorm. And so folks can take advantage of all of that stuff in Soldotna Saturday the 13th. And we will have a town hall. Representative Ruffridge and Elam will be joining myself to hear from folks about what your interests are and ideas. We look forward to hearing from the public on those things. And we'll just lay out kind of the fiscal picture of where we're at as a state and what we're looking at as far as policy and hear from folks. So looking forward to that. And we're looking forward to getting some things done in Juneau. Having the government spend money where appropriate and not where they shouldn't, making sure that we're laser focused on our constitutionally mandated stuff and really delivering for our area so that folks here don't have to spend so much time thinking about government. You can go out and win at life and take care of your family and your kids. And that doesn't have to be at the forefront of your mind. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Justin, any final thoughts?
Well, once again, I always appreciate being on the Kenai conversation, and yeah, hope to see folks this weekend. And if not, you know how to get a hold of me at rep.justin.ruffridge@akledge.gov. And I always, love having conversations with folks about any of these issues because I think they affect us all very differently and very deeply as Alaskans. And we should all be engaged in the conversation of how we build the state, how we pay for the things we do, how we educate our kids. And, that's really the job of a representative is to know where the people that are in my district, where their heads and hearts are at and try to represent that well. And I've certainly appreciated the honor of doing that. So thanks for letting us have a conversation about it today.
And that'll bring us to the end of this week's episode of the Kenai Conversation. Thank you so much again to Senator Bjorkman and to Representatives Ruffridge and Elam for joining us. As a reminder, you can hear the Kenai Conversation every Wednesday at 10 a.m. and Saturday at 5 p.m. here on KDLL. You can also find the show on our website at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for listening.